Well, thanks everybody for coming. I'm sorry you have to hear me two times in a row. I was thinking this morning I should have had completely different coloured slides or something, or brought in a hat, so it would have been a bit different. Anyway, there's a few more authors on this paper as well, so that makes for a bit of variety. So these are studies that we've done at Melbourne University with my colleagues Deli Chen, Arshad Islam, Robert Edis. We have a visiting Chinese scientist, Huilin Li, who's with us for the year from the Chinese Academy of Sciences. John Freeney's also been helping us, and again, Charlie Walker from Incitec Pivot. Once again, I'm sure a lot of you are aware of the nitrification process, and we should have ammonia and ammonium on the left-hand side here. So the process of nitrification is an oxidation process, and the first step of that to the formation of nitrite is carried out by these ammonia oxidizing bacteria, of which Nitrosomonas is a common one. The next stage of nitrification is carried out by the Nitrobacter to get nitrate. And the side products of other products you can get nitrous oxide formation from nitrification, and also from denitrification from nitrate. So the reason that we're interested in nitrification is that you can get a couple of loss pathways from these processes. So we can get nitrate leaching, and we can get nitrous oxide emissions, and the nitrous oxide emissions are of concern because it's a greenhouse gas. So estimates from Australia put the contribution of nitrous oxide from agricultural source to our total greenhouse gas budget as 3%. The nitrification inhibitor, all nitrification inhibitors, their role, like the urease inhibitors, is to suppress the activity of the ammonia oxidising bacteria in this case. So once again, they're not biocides, they're biostatic. So we've got, those of you from America would have heard of NSERV and DCD, that's both been around for a long time. And then there's one that's considered relatively new, which is this 3,4-dimethylpyrazole phosphate, which we call DMPP. And that's the one that we've been working on in Australia. So getting into the experiments that we had, so these are all small-scale laboratory incubation experiments that we've run on these soils. We've been in the process of developing methodologies for these, so there's a bit of variation in the procedures that we've used. So we've had, for the sugarcane, we've run trials on sugarcane and on soils and on pasture soils as well. So for the sugarcane soils, we were using 40 grams of soil and we had a high rate of nitrogen applied in that system. And for the pasture soils, we used a much bigger volume of soil and we had a lower rate of nitrogen applied. We ran a range of different temperatures and we kept the soil moisture content at a constant 60% water-filled pore space. The DMPP that we applied in the sugarcane, we ran two treatments. One was where we applied the DMPP as a liquid with urea, and the other one was where we applied it as the commercially available granule that we have in Australia. So these two systems had different rates of DMPP in them. Now the reason, both of these are granular, the reason for the difference in the micrograms per gram of soil is because of the different rates of nitrogen that were applied. So first of all, just showing you part of the map of Australia. So this is where sugarcane's grown, up along the coast here in Queensland. And we collected soils from up near Cairns and from Mackay. These soils differed slightly. One was a clay loam, the Mackay was a sandy loam, and the Pinjin soil had a high organic content, higher nitrogen, and a higher pH, and a higher nitrification potential than the one from Mackay. So getting into our results, this is the results for nitrate N formed. So we apply, we've applied this product as urea because that's what it comes as. So I haven't put in the ammonium results, I've just put in the nitrate results because that's the part that we're interested in. So we've got controls, which are the crosses. The red coloured lines are the urea treatments. The blue coloured lines are the urea with the inhibitor. And the boxes are the solution, so the lower rate of inhibitor. And the diamonds are the granules, so the higher rate of inhibitor. So we've got two different temperatures, 25 and 35 degrees. So looking at the Mackay soil, what we found at 25 degrees was that there was a slight delay in the amount of, or in the timing of ammonia, of nitrate that was produced, but the nitrate produced actually ended up going higher than what we observed in the urea treatment. Now these were just, excuse me, these were just soil incubation, so no plants to take up the ammonium that was retained. And at 35 degrees, we found that the inhibitor had no impact on the level of ammonium, the level of nitrate produced in that soil. In the other soil, the Pingin soil, though, we found it worked really well. So at 25 and 35 degrees, the inhibitor was able to reduce the level of nitrate formed down to that that we saw in the control treatments. So exactly the same conditions, different soils, quite different results. Excuse me. So this is the cumulative nitrous oxide emissions as well. So in our trials, we were obviously measuring nitrous oxide over a number of days. And surprisingly, we found that in the Mackay soil, where we had really no effect on nitrate formation, we find that it's reducing nitrous oxide emissions quite well. So between 64 and 89% at 25 degrees, not so well at 35 degrees, just 19%. So this is implying that perhaps the nitrous oxide from this process is coming not from denitrification, but from the nitrification process. And it could just be that there's a difference in the amount. So the levels of nitrous oxide compared to nitrate are less. So any inhibition that we see is greater. So it's sort of an issue of scale of those two different products from nitrification. The other thing that could be happening is that the nitrite produced in that first step, because the soils were very acidic, it could be breaking down, so we're not getting the nitrate produced. In the Pingin soil, as we would expect, we had greater than 93, well, we had very high reductions in nitrous oxide emissions, where we measured more than 93% reductions with the DMPP. So it was quite remarkable, really. The second soil that we looked at was a pasture soil. So we just looked at the topsoil and the subsoil. And this was collected from the University of Melbourne farm in northern Victoria. And the difference between the soils was that the topsoil was highly organic because it had the pasture thatch and, associated within the soil. Had a lot of nitrogen, similar pHs in the two levels. Higher CEC, and these values down here are quite important because they're very high levels of ammonium and nitrate, and the reason that these are very high is that it's the dairy farm has been fertilised for many years at a reasonably high level, and they also put the wash from the dairy out onto the bay where we were collecting our samples from. The nitrification potential of this soil was extremely high in the topsoil and still quite high in the subsoil. So looking at the nitrate formed in these soils, what we found was that in the topsoil, the nitrification potential was so high that even in our control treatment, which is the crosses here, there's no difference between the control treatment and the fertilised treatments. And because there's no difference here, the inhibitor wasn't having any effect because the fertiliser wasn't really having any effect either on what was occurring. When we looked at the subsoil, which had lower organic matter, lower nitrification potential, we found that the addition of the fertilisers did have an effect on the amount of nitrate formed, and that at 5 degrees the inhibitor did manage to reduce that level, but at the other temperatures it didn't seem to be having an effect on the level of nitrate formed. We also looked at the nitrous oxide emissions from these and found that we had reductions in all cases. So similar to the Mackay soil, where we were not expecting this because we hadn't seen nitrate differences in nitrate, we still found significant reductions in nitrous oxide emissions. So in some cases, the inhibitor was able to reduce the levels to that of the control, and in other cases, actually was obviously inhibiting the natural nitrous oxide production that's occurring. So we got levels less than the control treatments. Okay, so looking at a summary of what we found across these two different soils, we found that in all the soils we got a reduction in nitrous oxide emissions. And what we found was that in a soil where the inhibitor was clearly working very well, the Pingin soil, we got this greater than 93%, and that was didn't really matter what the temperature was. Whereas in the Mackay soil and the Dookie soils, we found that temperature was having an effect on the level of reduction of emissions. So I might just actually go back to this previous slide here to show you that as we move from 5 degrees across to 25 degrees, we found that the percentage reduction reduced in the subsoil from 76 to 31 degrees percent, and in the topsoil from 65 to 37%. So temperature in this soil had an effect on the level of inhibition that occurred. And the same occurred for the Mackay soil. We had 19% reduction at 35 degrees and 64% at 25 degrees. With the nitrate formation, we found in the Pingin that it did work. With the Mackay soil, we'd say it didn't really work, but there was a slight delay in nitrate formation. In the topsoil, there was no effect from the inhibitor. And in the subsoil, there was some effect from the inhibitor, and again, that was related to temperature, with the greatest reduction at the 5 degrees. So what we've sort of found from this is that temperature can have an effect, but not always. And soil type has an effect as well. So it's sort of, it's not possible. We're finding it hard to come up with anything that we can say this is going to cause this response. So it's sort of a combination of soil type and temperature. And even when we look at soil type, it's a combination of a number of different soil properties. And we haven't, at this stage, we haven't been able to work out which of those is the most important. But the organic matter content and the nitrification potential clearly seem to be important, and pH also seems to have a role to play. So in conclusion, we found DMPP reduced nitrous oxide emissions by this range of 14 to 93%. And as I said before, temperature effect depended on the soil type. And what this means is that it's not really possible to go and say, put DMPP on, you'll get this result. But what could possibly, one way of approaching this is to say, in an area with this type of soil, we would expect this sort of level of inhibition to occur. So we need to have some sort of screening system, identify sites where it's going to be beneficial, and identify which soils in those sites, what sort of benefits you would get from those. So thank you.
Any questions?
Helen, do you have any idea about methane oxidation?
I haven't measured methane, no, not in these systems. Sorry, I couldn't quite hear.
You may be, might offset some of the reductions you're getting in N2O.
If you get increased methane.
If there's naturally no grass in a pasture, you get a lot of methane oxidation within the inhibitor.
Yeah.
That as well.
Okay. We haven't looked into that. We are actually, we've just purchased a new GC that will enable us to do methane as well. So yeah, we might incorporate that into, we're going to head into some field trials as well. So try and incorporate that.
Do you measure nitrate in your soils?
The analysis we do is nitrite and nitrate together is the single analysis here. So we're not able to differentiate between those two.
But you could.
We could, yeah. We're looking at ways of trying to work out where nitrous oxide is coming from, so using oxygen 18 and N15 systems, yeah.
How does the DMPP compare to your experience with DCD and nitropyrin and these types of studies?
Yep, we have done some studies where we've compared it with NSAID, and it, the NSAID did seem to perform slightly better, but the application rates we were using the recommended ones. So with the NSAID, that's 10 milligrams per kilogram soil, and with the DMPP, it was slightly, it was less than that. It's around, actually, no, it wasn't. I think it might have been 9. So it was similar. So the NSERV did perform slightly better than the DMPP. We haven't really gone the NSERV way because of the issues with its volatility.
Do you think that the results in the topsoil indicate that there's a volatility issue with DMPP as well?
I don't think the DMPP is volatile, my understanding of that product. Yeah, so I think it breaks down rather than volatilizing.
I think the active component, the organic piece, is volatile. If it's in the phosphate salt, it may be less volatile, but I think they do, particularly with the liquid, there may be some experiencing some volatility.
Okay. So with the pasture soils, we use the granule that was made up. So unless there's an issue as the granule dissolves, that it comes out of that solution, I'm not aware of that. Yeah.
Question.
Can I actually just ask the question for that? What was your organic matter contents in your soils? Was that related to the methane production?
Any other questions for Helen? We'll close this session with giving our speaker a hand.